I have two guests this morning to talk about a musical performance on Wednesday, but this is a true collaboration between a cause and a musical concert. It starts, I think, with Austin McWilliams, who is a graduate student at Western Michigan University. And Austin, it's lovely to have you back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Kara.
Dave Watt is an HIV prevention supervisor for CARES. Nice to have you here, too.
Thank you for having me, Kara.
Well, we've got to get some background on this collaboration. Austin, having met you before, I know that you are an extremely industrious and ambitious musician in conducting and singing. We've talked for, I don't know, a few months now.
That's right.
About music. This is your passion project and your master's recital. So you poured your heart into this. Why don't you give us a bit of a summary to get us going?
Yeah, so maybe a year ago, my colleague Victoria Jackson showed me this piece of Rage and Remembrance by John Crigliano, which is a piece that was written in 1991 for chorus and some strings and percussion. It's a piece that pays homage to victims of AIDS from that period, and I just found it incredibly compelling, and I knew that I wanted it to be on my master's recital.
And that's before you were born, right? 1991?
Before I was born, yeah. But this is a crisis that I've been interested in for a while now. And after I discovered this piece, I discovered that there's actually quite a large body of music written about HIV/AIDS. So I dug into that a little more and decided to program an entire recital around it.
It's a significant year or time period. And you know, Dave, I'm bringing you in already.
Sure.
This is a time that, for those who remember, is painful, and yet the personal strength of so many people is both remembered, and the legacy of it brought us so many gains for today.
Sure. I mean, when I hear 1991, I think that was before medicines worked. Like, that was before the cocktail, where HIV was then very, very treatable in the mid-90s. So when I think of 1991, those were very hard times during the epidemic where there wasn't much hope, that medicines didn't work very well. I mean, it began in the HIV/AIDS began in the late 70s, early 80s, and that was just a hard time. Very hard time, very hard hit. A lot of artists were hit by the epidemic. So, I mean, it did cause a lot of creation of art. So it's really exciting that, you know, Austin, being so young, can recognize that and raise awareness about a piece that was written in 91.
Yeah. At the time, too, there's almost a barrier to communicating the sidelining of gay voices and not that it simply hit the gay community, but it was often through organization of the gay community that had to work so hard to make the message heard that we are human too. We need the same basic concerns from our government as everyone else.
Absolutely. Gay men's health crisis was crucial in helping get the word out about educating people about HIV since our there was so, how do I say it nicely, so little energy put towards it compared to disproportionately what was happening, and which is immediately why I thought of about the AIDS quilt. The AIDS quilt is brought here because it was also part of helping raise awareness. Each of the AIDS quilt panels consist of eight sections, eight remembrances of people that passed away due to HIV/AIDS related causes. And each of those panels were 3 feet by 6 feet. That was designed to lay out on city hall steps in demonstration of people who passed away. And that 3 by 6 feet is the size of a coffin. So those it's very chilling when you think of like when how the AIDS quilt began. It's just as a way of look at all these people that are passing away. And I think that's where the rage comes in, of rage and remembrance, is just the anger that the president at the time wasn't talking about HIV and AIDS, even though it was affecting huge populations.
Yeah.
So you know, we're very excited to have three of the AIDS Quilt panels here at to be on display for people to check out. It doesn't happen very often.
It's at Western Michigan University in the School of Music building. As you walk in to the foyer there, right before the entrance of the recital hall, which is where this concert will be held. I'm curious, Austin, about, you know, the homework you did. You heard this piece, you were taken by Of Rage and Remembrance, the piece by Corigliano. Then what? I mean, it's easy to like a piece, but then to, you know, create a performance of it and prepare.
Yeah, it's no small feat. One of the most difficult things is actually just getting the ensemble to do this. So it's scored for double men's chorus, boy soprano, mezzo soprano, 8 cellos, 4 double basses, timpani, and then all of the chorus members have to hold chimes that they will play during the performance. So just getting all the pieces together has actually been quite a challenge. And in fact, last night was our first combined rehearsal, where everyone was together in one room at once, and it went extremely well. I'm so excited for Wednesday.
They had learned the piece well, and you were able to put it together.
Yes, we had many separate rehearsals before that, choral rehearsals or instrumental rehearsals, but last night was the combined rehearsal.
That sounds like an unusual group of instruments and voices. Why did John Corigliano make it that way?
Yeah, so he had a great friend whose name was Giulio Sorrentino, and he was a cellist, and an amateur cellist, but he and John Corigliano would sit around sometimes, and Giulio would improvise on his cello, and John would improvise on the piano, and they would just sort of play back and forth and record these things, and Giulio ended up dying from AIDS, and John Corigliano took some of these improvisations to form the motivic basis of the piece, which also influenced the instrumentation of the piece, 8 cellos and 4 double basses being the primary instruments.
Tell us about the words, the lyrics that he put to music here.
Sure. So when John Corigliano composed his Symphony No. 1, that was in 1990. It was in 4 movements, and he composed that for one of his great friends, Sheldon Skolnick, who was also dying from AIDS at the time. And he took the 3rd movement of that symphony after he was commissioned by several choruses across the United States to turn it into a choral symphony, or as John Corigliano calls it, a choral chacon. The interesting thing that Corigliano did in the 3rd movement of his first symphony is actually commission a playwright to write elegies for these men whom they both knew. This is William M. Hoffman, the men whom they both knew who died from AIDS. So Hoffman wrote these little elegies for these men, and Corigliano took these elegies and gave them to cellists to play as solos during the symphony. So at that point, when he switched from symphony to making the choral movement out of the symphony, all he had to do was take Hoffman's text and put it back onto the melodies, and it was essentially already written for him.
That sounds like just a special creation of this, and honoring people who are now gone for almost 30 years, if my math is right. But they were taken so young, and so many talented people. That, yeah, as Dave said, the art coming out of this era is truly significant. John Corigliano is a composer I think of as a bright star in American composing. Well, now he's sort of an elder statesman.
That's right.
But he started off the son of, I think, a principal violinist of the New York Philharmonic, and just writing pieces out of an abundance of genius and creativity. But when this hits one's life, to see that he didn't shy away from his community, what was happening in it, is so significant. And I'm really glad, Austin, you found the piece and decided to perform it here.
Thanks, Kara. Yeah, one of my favorite things about the piece is that while it is intensely personal to Corigliano himself, where he's naming his own friends who died from AIDS, he also leaves room for the performers. And in fact, in the final minutes of the piece, you'll hear that the people on stage in the score are instructed to actually state the names of friends whom they knew who died from AIDS. Now, one of the interesting things about this performance is that most of the performers are students, and most of the people performing don't actually know anyone who died from AIDS, thankfully. And so we've had to adjust the score a bit, where instead of naming friends, we're actually stating the names of the people whose names are on the AIDS quilt in the lobby, as well as other people who died from AIDS within the state of Michigan.
I'm curious to learn a little more before we listen to some of the Corigliano. To learn a little more about how Dave Watt from CARES and yourself, Austin McWilliams, worked on putting this concert together in a meaningful way for both of you, for both of your organizations.
Well, I was familiar with the work that CARES did and how important they are in this community. And so back in December, I put a few feelers out and someone threw Dave Watt's name my way. And so I just sent him an email and he was very enthusiastic about the idea. So we've been running with it all semester. And Dave has really been essential to making this concert happen, not just musically, but also socially, and how he's come in to educate our choirs multiple times about the latest in HIV awareness and prevention, how he's been responsible for a lot of the publicity and getting these AIDS quilts all the way from Detroit to hang in the Dalton lobby. He's just been instrumental in making this happen. And I'm so thankful to have a great organization like CARES to collaborate on this project with.
Dave, I'm ready for some education.
Sure.
Lay it on us.
Well, CARES is the Community AIDS Resource Education Services. We are a local community-based organization. We offer case management services for people living with HIV. And I run the prevention team, and we do offer free HIV testing. And besides that, our office, we're out in the community. Because we service 10 counties, all of Southwest Michigan. Wow. So we have 300 plus clients are living with HIV that we help them access treatment, help them access doctors. You can imagine the importance of adherence to medications and helping people manage their lives so that they can make it to doctor's appointments and yeah. and be successful in their treatment. So when I got the email from Austin, it was something I quickly wanted to grasp onto. I mean, I'm also involved in the arts. I've minored in music at Calvin College.
Hey.
So, yeah.
I minored in music as well, so we're on the same page.
A minor in music, we've joked about, is way easier than majoring in music. So just involving the arts in the education is something that is close to my heart. And also involving a younger generation that didn't see what I saw. Didn't experience what I'd experienced. I mean, I'm 56 years old. So, you know, I was in I was a young man when HIV was making a presence. So the opportunity to partner with Western and reach a new audience in a new way, we've never done this before. I don't know of any concert that was based entirely on HIV in recent years. So this is just an amazing collaboration and really appreciate being involved.
I would like to point out that this is a free concert on Wednesday night, and it begins at 7:30 p.m. Dave, I am assuming that anyone who attends this concert will have access to lots of information and a personal a chance to chat perhaps with someone from CARES.
Sure. We have several of CARES staff speaking during the concert. So Austin's created opportunities for us to inform people about what's happening. Mm-hmm. So we've got a couple of speakers lined up, transition between, you know, choirs moving onto stage and off the stage. So Austin's keeping the audience in mindful of that to keep the concert like engaging and information sharing, not, you know, simply there for the arts, which I think was really, really incredible.
CARES will also have a table in the lobby during and before and after the performance, and so will LGBT Student Services on campus, as well as out front.
It's the event of the week.
It truly is.
On Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. I would like to take a musical break now and hear a recording of this Corigliano piece of Rage and Remembrance, which, as you said, the lyrics we'll hear were written by his friend, a playwright.
William M. Hoffman, yes.
William Hoffman. How long is this piece, and does it come in separate parts? Is it a multi-movement work?
It's a single movement because it comes from Carigliano's third movement of his symphony. Mm-hmm. So it is one movement. It's interesting because Carigliano says in the score that it's about 17 minutes in duration, but there's only one professional recording of it that exists, Leonard Slatkin conducting, and he takes it a little bit faster, and it's about 13 minutes in his performance. and I'll admit that my timing for this is running somewhere around 13 or 14.
Okay. I'm with Austin McWilliams and Dave Watts, and we'll be back after listening to music from John Corigliano's Of Rage and Remembrance. Just a brief moment of a major tonality, a little bit of peace.
You know, this piece is based on a 12-tone row.
It's
completely atonal. And so he uses the row and harmonizes each of those tones with chords that are non-functional, completely atonal. But the really remarkable thing is that the final chord for the final note in the row is just B-flat major. And so it feels like a really incredible cadential point every time it arrives in the piece.
If you tuned in during the music, I'm talking to Austin McWilliams, who is a graduate student at Western Michigan University, will be receiving his master's degree on Wednesday. Your master's recital starts at 7:30 p.m. It's free and open to the public, and it's an event that doesn't come along very often. And we have a collaborator here who can vouch for that, Dave Watt, an HIV prevention supervisor at CARES. And together, they've created a program that, of course, includes performances that you'll be conducting, Austin, but will also lead us through some of the issues, historic and current, that can really open our eyes about HIV in Southwest Michigan.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Kara.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hey, you mentioned a boy soprano way back when that's required for this piece.
That's right.
And it just, I have to follow up and say, do you have a boy soprano, or will you be singing countertenor?
No, ma'am. No, this will be Nathan Thompson from the Kalamazoo Children's Chorus. Fred Sang helped me organize that.
That's wonderful. A true boy soprano.
A true boy soprano, yeah.
Terrific. This piece we've been listening to is Of Rage and Remembrance, and that is the title of the concert. And you'll see immediately you walk into the Dalton Center a huge quilt, or rather, how many pieces of the AIDS quilt?
Oh, we were able to get three AIDS quilt panels. In each AIDS quilt panel, it consists of eight smaller panels representing eight people who have passed away of HIV AIDS related causes. So with the three panels, there'd be 24 people that are represented in the lobby.
We have one panel on display right now. The other two will go up right before the recital.
So we are talking both historic and current issues in this piece of Rage and Remembrance. We mentioned at the beginning that it's from 1991 when, as Dave said, hope was in small supply, partly because they're still desperately searching for ways to treat AIDS.
The treatment options were limited in the early 90s. It wasn't until the mid-90s that the modern of treating HIV on multiple fronts in multiple ways. With it's called the cocktail, where it would be three, maybe four different HIV medications in combination to successfully treat HIV.
What does that physically look like? Are they pills or
Today, injections? It looks like a one pill a day. So one pill can contain four different HIV medications. So basically the way medications work is when taken daily, it coats the immune system. If we know how the virus works, the virus invades someone's immune system. And over time, the virus would wipe out somebody's immune system when gone unchecked, untreated.
Which would allow a variety of nasty things to take up residence.
Yeah. Over years, 5, 10 years, somebody's immune system would be wiped out. And that might all happen without them knowing it. So, in fact, half of all new diagnoses in Michigan and United States wide, the HIV has progressed to that length that people don't know that it's happening to them, that they don't think to get tested, or maybe due for whatever reason, some type of stigma around HIV, that they're not getting an HIV test. So then how do they find out they have HIV? Because they have another opportunistic infection, perhaps pneumonia or maybe thrush on the tongue. There's things that happen only when somebody doesn't have an immune system left or not much left.
Are these people of all genders, ages, just throughout?
I mean, HIV, it's a virus. It does not discriminate.
Yeah.
There are definitely disproportionately affected populations. So that's kind of where we focus our efforts. The exciting thing is, though, is that HIV is very treatable. So once we do find out somebody has HIV, the medications that we have available since the mid-90s have been work exceptionally well. And recent years, even those medications have very few side effects, so they're very easy to tolerate and without long-term side effects. So there's so much good news now that we're happy to say that, you know, of all of our clients, that 90% of our clients are successfully treating their HIV. And when that happens, their viral load can be so small within their own body that they can't transmit the virus to somebody else. Hmm. So they've therefore become untransmittable.
It's essentially like stopped.
Yes. The life expectancy for somebody treating HIV now is the same as somebody who does not have HIV. It's exciting news.
Yeah.
So this is the concept of when somebody achieves this undetectable, it's called an undetectable viral load, where, you know, we help bring clients to the doctor, and the medicine is working so well, they can't detect the virus. That doesn't mean we stop the medication. That means we continue the medication as is, because it's working great.
Which is right when I would start to forget to... If personally speaking, if I'm not feeling bad, I would forget to be
right
on top of it.
Yep. And that's something that we help educate our clients, is that once we achieve this undetectable, we want to stay untransmittable. That just because you're feeling well, you've achieved this, doesn't mean the virus has gone away. And we know that to be true. If somebody stops taking medication, that the virus can come back. So that's part of what we do, is educate. And we're thrilled that over 90% of our clients have achieved an undetectable viral load with our help and with their knowledge and with their taking charge of their lives.
CARES is online. You can check in with them anytime by phone or online. And there's a couple of additional public events in the near future, including the popular Dining Out for Life event, which is coming up on Thursday, April 25th.
Yeah, we're very excited. This is our 11th year. This is our signature event of the year. And not only does it raise, you know, awareness about CARES, but we have it raises some significant funds. Grants can't cover everything, so this helps raise significant funds for us to help us continue to do the work that we do in Southwest Michigan. We have over 40 restaurants and local eateries participating. They have all signed up to take this action on. And so we're very blessed in the greater Kalamazoo area to have so many generous restaurant owners that they will donate 25% or more to CARES. And you don't need a coupon. You just show up to eat at one of those participating restaurants, and the restaurant owner takes care and writes a check based on the sales for the day. And that includes all food and drink. So we're always encouraging people to have an extra glass of wine or maybe a dessert that you might not normally have, you know. So just to help, because for a good cause, you know.
It's a major effort for CARES, and it's Thursday, April 25th. At least 25% of your check at the restaurant will provide HIV services in Southwest Michigan. And CARES is on social media, Facebook, Twitter, of course, online website. But let's circle back and talk to Austin again about Music for Wednesday, which is the recital that we're focused on this hour. Begins at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. We've listened to sort of the centerpiece already by John Corigliano. But what else were you in? Did that inspire the rest of the program? Did you have other things picked out already?
It did inspire the rest of the program, but I knew that I didn't want to leave people thinking that living with HIV is still doom and gloom, because that's simply not the case anymore, as Dave was just describing. So I knew there had to be other music out there that could portray more accurately what life is like for people living with HIV today. So I found this cantata by Zachary Wadsworth, who's a young composer. It's a 45-minute cantata, and I excerpted one movement of it, and this movement is called Retrovir. And Retrovir is the brand name for the first commercially available drug to treat HIV, and that's often called AZT.
A major breakthrough.
Major breakthrough, yes. And this drug itself didn't prove to be incredibly effective when it alone was used, but it was the first drug that was actually developed in order to treat HIV, and as part of a cocktail that Dave was describing, it can be incredibly effective. So it was the first step on a pathway toward living a healthy life. So this movement that we're going to listen to is entitled Retrovir, and he sets the text of this poet, Tem Dlugosz, who died from AIDS himself in the early 90s, but you'll hear this really, really incredibly compelling poem, and one of the lines in it is, "Here the sky is always blue and white, the colors of the pills that poison you while they extend your life, inoculating you with time that draws you back with fingers curved around the bowstring. You're not the target, you're the arrow."
I'm with Austin McWilliams, musician, conductor, and Dave Watts from CARES. And we'll take a break now and listen to this music by Mr. Wadsworth. Retrovir, the name of this movement. That's a knockout of a piece that Austin McWilliams will be conducting Wednesday night in a very special master's recital concert that brings together singers, instrumentalists, and a collaboration with CARES of Southwest Michigan. And Austin, tell us again the name of that piece and the composer.
Yeah, so that's a piece by Zachary Wadsworth. It comes from his cantata, The Far West, and that movement was entitled Retrovir, which is the brand name for what's commonly known as AZT, the first drug commercially available to treat HIV.
Now tell us, now we're near the end of the hour, sum up some of the rest of the pieces that we can't listen to this hour, the way, tell us about what audiences can expect.
Sure. So something that we haven't touched on at all in this hour is that a large portion of the population globally affected by HIV/AIDS are actually people living in sub-Saharan Africa. And so there's a portion of the concert that's dedicated to that as well. It's difficult to play recordings of that because one of the pieces is taught orally. And I'm not sure that there are any professional recordings of it that exist. But I know that a lot of times, especially in this country, this is thought of as an affliction of white men. That's what's often seen in the media. And that's simply not the case. And I really wanted to be conscious of that in the context of this recital.
Tell us about some other pieces besides this,
sure.
This learned by ear.
Sure, we'll have that. We'll have one piece to open up the program, which is not directly related to HIV. It actually is by Antonio Salieri, of course, the famed nemesis of Mozart. And we'll be performing the first movement of his Requiem to open the concert, which in this case will be a Requiem for the dead, those who died from AIDS.
Again, the concert's at 7:30 on Wednesday, and not only will there be a full program of music performed by Western Michigan University students, voice students, and a whole lot of string players from the school, but during the concert, there will be transitional moments in which Dave and your friends at CARES will be able to share information that, you know, those of us, there's a lot of us who don't keep on top of the most recent, you know, trends and information about HIV in our area.
There is a lot of exciting news in regards to HIV science. Lately, just in October, we got some funding to do a program to help people access PrEP. And PrEP is a daily medication that prevents HIV. PrEP is short for pre-exposure prophylaxis, so it's a daily pill that somebody takes so in case they're exposed to HIV, the virus won't take hold, so they will not actually contract HIV while taking this medication. So it's very exciting to be able to offer people options for people to have hope of, hey, like this is something I can stay on top of. I can take a daily pill and know that I'm not going to get HIV. So it's what's really exciting is the empowerment of, you know, people who thought they could never have children again. They could be in a relationship with somebody, and that's now an option. Mm. So it's very exciting to offer this as an option for people.
All I can think about is all the expense of healthcare stories I have been exposed to for years now. And what are some of the issues with this medication? Is CARES there to help people afford it as well as use it?
Absolutely. That's part of what we have, why we have, we call it PrEP Navigators, to help people navigate accessing this medication. The pharmaceutical company that makes it, Gilead, has copay assistance, so that that covers up to $7,200 a year. So we help them apply for this and make sure that they can access this for free. If somebody doesn't have insurance, we can help them get insurance. So if you can imagine, a lot of young people just never think to go to the doctor. So helping them find a medical provider, helping them find a doctor they feel comfortable talking to, helping find, train. We are also helping train medical providers on what PrEP is, on this medication called Truvada. So helping train medical facilities on what Truvada is so that they can maybe help raise awareness with their patients.
It sounds like any person having any concern around this issue will get help if they call CARES.
Absolutely.
You can put them in touch with...
Yes. I have an appointment later this afternoon with somebody who's seeking access to help get on PrEP.
What is the CARES website again?
CARESSWM.org.
CARESSWM.org.
You got it.
All right. Well, we're sort of in our final thoughts, summaries, end of the hour portion. So I'd like to finish with Austin. What are your thoughts here at the end of the hour?
It flew by. It did fly by, didn't it? You know, I'm incredibly excited for Wednesday night. I think it'll be really meaningful for everyone in the audience and for performers alike. I'm hoping to get a decent crowd at this thing. And, you know, to be frank, it'll probably be the most significant night or musical performance of my life so far. So I'm just incredibly excited about it and thankful for everyone who's given time to this recital and to this cause.
If I can, I've had the opportunity to present the latest information to two of the choirs, and just the passion and the energy you feel in that room from all the performers just in their rehearsal space is just, I just can't wait until Wednesday night.
All right. Well, what should we listen to here at the end of the hour?
We'll close out with one piece by Ned Roram, and we're circling back a bit in the recital. This one will actually occur before the Crigliano or the Wadsworth that we've heard already. And this piece, it's called Love Alone. Roram sets the text of Paul Monet, whose friend died from AIDS back in, it was 1986. And so you'll hear this poetry sounds a bit like Stream of Consciousness, where Paul Monet is just grieving from the loss of his dear friend. And there's just one particularly compelling line where he says, "Oh, sweetie, will you please forgive me this? That every time I opened a box of anything, glad bags, one a day's king size was the worst. I'd think, will you still be here when the box is empty?" So he's really wondering, is the bag of trash bags in the pantry going to outlast his friend?
Music of Ned Roram, who, as I recall, was born in the 20s or 30s.
Yes.
And lived an exuberantly gay life, actually.
And wrote very passionately
yes,
about it.
Is he still with us?
He is still with us, yes.
90-something.
Yes.
Music of Ned Roram, and listeners, I leave you with this music and a reminder that Austin McWilliams' master's recital of Rage and Remembrance is Wednesday, April 17th, this Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall, and it's free and open to all.